The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Welcome in to Rover Sports. We're here on a fine Tuesday, and there's a lot to talk about today. Firstly, I want to tell everybody where they can find us. You can find this show on 97.5 HD2. We are right next to Fanatic, and we are Fanatic Call Letters. We are WWDB 860 AM. Many of you are listening there. We are on, if you're on your tablet or device, obviously on Sports Talk, WWDBAM.com. And now, exciting news on the social media front. We have Phila Sports Doc on YouTube. PHILA Sports Doc DOC on YouTube. We also have Bruce Grossinger on LinkedIn. Everybody, feel free to just friend me on LinkedIn. And finally, I understand this week we're going to get out of Facebook jail, and we will probably have a new name. It probably won't be Bruce Grossinger Facebook. It might be Rover Sports Facebook. But the good news is we'll be back on all platforms. And also, big shout-out, as you guys know, Seth Joyner postgame show. Everybody subscribe to that with Seth, Mark, and Derek Gunn. And with that as an introduction, it is a beautiful Tuesday night. We are perched here over a beautiful, balmy 75 degrees, Bala Cynwyd, One Bala Plaza. And with that as a backdrop, the Philadelphia Eagles have finally won a game easily. Spencer, what did you see?
Well, what I saw was elite defensive play. I saw, you know, one team that belonged on an NFL field, and then I saw another team that looked like a minor league JV team. And the New York Giants could not protect. Their offensive line was abysmal in the game. And the Eagles took advantage. I mean, N'Kobe Dean had two sacks. I think the team had six sacks overall. The New York Giants, I mean, their offense has scored in the past eight quarters. Their offense has scored, I think, 17 points in eight quarters. I think they've scored maybe two touchdowns in eight quarters. And, you know, they're still dealing with Daniel Jones, and the owner doesn't make any sort of pivot from Daniel Jones. So the New York Giants, eventually the defense was going to crack. Now, Kellen Moore still called a good game. The first quarter of the game, for the first quarter and a half, the Giants were getting home with defense. Now, psychologically, did the Giants kind of quit and waver as the game went on? Sure, if you don't have an offense, you're not going to win, you're not going to get paid, you're not going to have a good feeling in the locker room after, if you can't, if your offense is invisible, which is what the Giants has been for years. So, but Kellen Moore still had a great play call with Saquon Barkley rolling to his left, and Saquon Barkley got red hot in this game, 176 yards, which is probably his second career high in yards for Saquon Barkley, and he's familiar with that turf, he's familiar with the field there, and it was just a great afternoon for the Eagles, and it really took the spotlight off of Nick Sirianni because he was able to get a win. And it was just such a stress-free afternoon for the football team here.
So it seems like the Eagles are very good when they play very bad teams. They played the Cleveland Browns. They could have beaten them. You know, this was not a runaway game. Could have beaten them better. But the Cleveland Browns are a perfect team to get better. And also, of course, the New York Giants are a team that's just wallowing in misery with virtually no offense at all. And what happens? We have highs and lows as fans. We see Saquon Barkley. We see the team with eight sacks, five sacks. And you see guys, even like Bryce Huff, getting a sack. You see our boy Sweat with two sacks in the game. N'Kobe with multiple sacks. So everybody was getting well. And Obviously, Saquon has rapidly become, along with Bryce Harper, probably the most popular Philadelphia athlete here. I'm trying to think about it. Obviously, Abeid is who he is. But I look at Harper, and I look at the Flyers. They have a new young guy, a new rookie, but can't even say his name.
Maybe Ty Maxey?
Yeah. Yeah,
Tyrese Maxey.
I think Tyrese Maxey is very popular. But I think Saquon Barkley, and we have a Penn State alum, a person who actually has seen and been around Saquon, and told me a great story. Saquon, there's an old thing that if you are who you are, if you're a humble person, if you're an enthusiastic person, if you're a Philly person, if you're a Pennsylvania person, you just don't lose that with fame and money, and Saquon hasn't lost it. Tell us about your own experience at Penn State with Saquon. Obviously, you're a big fan. Let's hear the story, Josh.
Well, it wasn't my I was told this by one of the Penn State football coaches. So Saquon played his rookie year with the Giants. Had a great year. I think he was like either rookie of the year or was he runner up?
Yeah,
he was close to it. And he came back for the pro day. He was doing a lot of promotions, and wanted to surprise the guys like Trace McSorley, several of the players he grew very close to. And he shows up. He shows up at the football house, the dorm, but it's more like an apartment complex. And he's knocking on the window around 12:30 in the morning. And they're like, they didn't realize who it was. And he's like, "Yo, let me in." And they assumed that he was going to stay at a hotel. They had no idea it was coming. And he just wanted to be with the boys and crash on the couch. And they were up till 4 o'clock in the morning, being college guys. And I always say this, Doc. Sometimes you're a person that no matter how much stature you have, you just want to be with your buddies, the guys that you grinded with, the guys that you live with, the guys that you shared a lot of, Big Ten championship, Rose Bowls, guys that pretty much brought Penn State back in many ways. And those were the guys he wanted to spend the time with. And all the money and the fame that he could, you could stay in a luxury hotel and stay college, which there are a few, but he just wanted to be a part of that and be a part of that support system. And that's who kind of he is. He doesn't really need all that. He's very humble. He's a very humble individual.
Charlie Bowles, welcome on to the show. Welcome to the Rover. You're our charter Rover. So you obviously watched the Eagles game. Certainly unusual to have the ability for me as an Eagles fan and also to do a postgame show with a few injuries, not too many, to be able to really put my feet up and watch a game and kind of enjoy it, kind of savor it, like a fine wine. You watched that game. Were you surprised at all? What are your big takeaways from Eagles-Giants?
Yes, number one, then good to be on with everyone again. The state of New York, I couldn't have been more wrong about this weekend. Between the Giants and the Jets, I have made two of the worst calls I've made in years. I thought the Giants, with neighbors being back, was going to play them tough. They, I looked at Hurts' stats at the Meadowlands. They were just very mediocre. But the thing is, I guess what you saw is Hurts was more of a game manager. Aside from that one pass to Brown on fourth down, he really kind of was lower key and let Saquon Barkley do, a lot of the work. And I think it worked for Philly this week. And I think, again, you saw the Georgia guys step up for the first time all season. They all had really good games. Now let's see if they can keep it up.
Definitely. Even guys like Nolan Smith had his best game as an Eagle. And N'Kobe, I think they're learning how to use him properly. N'Kobe was great in Georgia at shooting the gaps between the huge tackles. And he did that. He is lightning fast. And you know what? He's much better at shooting through like a missile in sacking a quarterback who's fairly stationary than making open field tackles. We've seen N'Kobe, and again, 2 weeks ago, Seth Joyner was saying, he said, this guy is not an NFL linebacker. He's too small, and he just can't tackle. And one thing about Seth is he will eat crow. And he said, look, I've got to eat crow. He said, I was wrong about N'Kobe. N'Kobe played a great game, had two sacks, was all over. And one of our favorite people, Cooper DeJean, just a great guy. You love him in Iowa. A big energy guy. Spence, yeah. What did you see with Cooper in that game?
Well, just tremendous at breaking tackles, like on special teams, and like gotten those hidden yardages, like those 15, 20-yard gains. And he might even be a guy that you put out like on offense to do like a jet sweep with, or you know, it's like somebody you could do wildcat with, like Brad Smith used to be a Missouri quarterback, played at, on the Jets, was a great punt returner. That's what Cooper DeJean did. And then on defense, Cooper DeJean, they were able to play defense. Now, for the Giants, again, like I think that Drew Lock would have been a better answer because Drew Lock at least will test you deep. I mean, the Eagles were able to compress the field entirely. And Daniel Jones is not able to throw the ball more than 10 yards. So for the New York Giants, they're not too far away. They just have to luck into a quarterback next year in the draft, and they're going to be off like the Redskins. They're going to be off like the Houston Texans. That's all you have to do. You have to hit that if you're the Giants.
Yeah, but Spencer, I don't think Daniel Jones was on. He had no time back there. He was getting hit as soon as the ball was, he was stepping back pass. He had no time to go deep. I mean, he's got one of the best young receivers out there, Malik Nabers, and he had absolutely no time to get him down, get the ball down the field.
Josh, it's been 6 years. When has Jones ever been able to go deep?
Well, Spencer, I mean, he's got no. They got 7 sacks last. They were getting how many? What I saw a stat where they had like 15 hurries. He got tagged 12 times.
Well, that's because he's not getting rid of the ball. It's also Brian Daboll, Josh. You're right, because the Giants are losing their best player, Andrew Thomas, and that was a huge part of the game. He's the stalwart. He keeps the team together. When you don't have your left tackle, when you don't have your Pro Bowler, when you don't have the best guy on the team, he's out for the season. That was a death nail for the season. So Daboll should have called runs, should have called a lot of screens. And Daboll honestly coached a horrible football game. I mean, Daboll's getting worse game by game. Like, Daboll's squarely on the hot seat now, Bruce.
There's a lot of people here on our social media, on our YouTube. They're all clamoring for a little bit more of an expanded preview of the Cincinnati Bengals against the Eagles. And I think they have a point. So I'm going to state that I'm going to tell you one of my concerns. Right now, Jordan Mailata has a grade 3 hamstring tear, all right? Not surgical. There's 3A and 3B, but he's out. They put him on IR. That's a bad sign, all right? Also, there's a guy we call the big porcelain doll. His name is Mekhi Becton. And as you recall, Josh, you told me, you know that he always gets hurt. He had a finger injury. This guy had a concussion in 2021 with the Jets in the preseason, and he had another concussion last week. So the fact is, their offensive line, they're missing Becton, they're missing Mailata. Fred Johnson he wasn't terrible, but he didn't grade out very well. And obviously, you're up against a Bengals defense that has been so bad that in the beginning part of the season, the Bengals went 1-3, and they were scoring over 30 points, 35 points. In Burrow, you know, he's a gentleman, but the offense was frustrated. Mm-hmm. Jamar Chase, Higgins, those guys were really frustrated. There was a divide between the offense and defense. So I'm going to let Charlie lead us in, because we're going to do an extended preview of Bengals, Eagles. Firstly, Josh, what is the spread on this game? My guess, I'm just going to try to guess.
Yeah,
the Bengals are at home. They really need the game. I think it's going to be a tight spread. But what
well,
is it?
Guess it, Bruce. I want to hear.
Okay, I'm going to guess. I'm going to say Bengals. Okay, now you're really putting me on the spot. I'm going to say the Eagles. I'm going to say the Eagles are getting 2 points. That would be my guess.
2.5.
Great guess.
And I
great
swear
job.
I did not know it. So for all the people out there, so the Eagles, and the thought behind it is the Bengals are at home, and I don't believe it'll be that tight of a game. But Charlie, can you break down the game? Let's talk about the different layers of this game. Go ahead.
Well, I think the concern, if you're from Cincinnati, is the lackluster offense the last couple of weeks. They've played the Giants and the Browns, just like the Eagles have. They've produced, aside from the opening kickoff, they really struggled on offense last week. Against the Giants, they put up 17, but again, the Giants couldn't do anything either. So, you don't know whether that, you know, Henderson stepped up a little bit. You don't know whether their defense actually was playing better, or was it the opponent was just that bad. So I guess what we're going to see this week is two teams that have played the same common opponents the last 2 weeks that both were struggling going into those weeks, and we're going to see which one has improved more. My concern watching both of those Bengals games was that, again, the Joe Burrow just, you know, again, just so off with his with both receivers. I just don't know, you know, even the tight end, Gesicki as well. Yeah, again, Chase Brown doesn't look like, you know, even in the first couple games he ran the ball a lot more. They're getting away from the run. They're getting very heavy. He depended on Burrow. I don't know. I'd like to see. This is a very interesting week because, again, of the points I said before, you have two teams that, you know, common opponents that are both struggling, and we'll be able to see clearly which one improved after Sunday.
Now, I'm going to give you my prediction for this game. They call NFL not for long, and when I predict oscillation between games and between teams, I'm usually right, and I've done pretty well with my picks. So I'm picking an oscillatory game. My own, and I'm an Eagles fan, and you guys can hate me if you like, but I believe that this game, I believe the Bengals will win by more than 7 points. And I'll tell you why. Joe Burrow is a master at looking at film and picking. He's going to be able to pick apart these young guys. Slay is slowed down. He has a chronic left knee injury. He takes himself out of the last two games. He took himself out. There wasn't a particular injury, but he's definitely slow. You're up against Higgins and Chase. These are elite players. Now, the one thing that Burrow could do better than anybody, he could look at the DBs. He knows when they have their backs turned, and he'll just put the ball up there, and he knows those guys will come down with it. And I believe that as far as Blankenship, as far as C.G. Gardner-Johnson, they're just not going to be able to do it. So I believe that Burrow, especially on a rebound game, is going to be licking his chops. If he played bad last week, he's a guy who doesn't play bad too often. He's 3-4. This is really a must-win game for the Bengals to stay in the hunt, and they are a good team. And so for myself, I think that the defense has been bad, but I believe they know that Hurts, they're going to throw some different looks at him. It Hurts is just not that good at reading defenses. He locks on to one guy. He locked on to A.J. Brown, and A.J. is great, but he just doesn't look at multiple receivers. So I believe, looking at Burrow, they're going to score over 30 points in the game. The Eagles are probably going to score about 17 points. They're going to run Saquon, but guess what? The Bengals are going to be stacking them up. They're going to be 8 in the box. They're going to be looking for Saquon, and they're just not going to be able to. Saquon's going to have, I'd say, 45 yards in the game. That's what I'm going to predict. So I'm not a betting guy, but I would bet the under as far as Saquon's yards are concerned. And in this league, the Eagles are 4-2. They're going to come home 4-3. And I just, that's the sense I have. A little round the horn now, Spence. What do you sense in this game?
Very interesting assertion. Now, one of the last times you did, you were right about, I think, the Bucs killing the Eagles. That's the one game where the Eagles defense was terrible. Other than that, the Eagles defense has actually been pretty good. Maybe, I guess, the game in Brazil, excluding that. But the Falcons, they played really well. They should have won. They gave up some late stuff. You know, it was bizarre. The Giants, they played really well. The Saints, everyone thought the Saints were going to beat them at that time in the year. The Eagles defense stepped up. The key is getting to Joe Burrow. He's not mobile. So if the pass rush is really for real, that's what's going to swing the game. But if Joe has time back there, you're right. It is going to be high scoring. Now, the Eagles offense, it also goes for Barkley because Jalen Hurts, he can't improvise. When Hurts gets outside the pocket, when he rolls right or left, you're just waiting for a strip sack to happen, which is where all the turnovers are. He can't improvise Jalen Hurts. Yes.
So, Josh, I have a question for you. You are Vic Fangio. Do you play press coverage on these guys who are very fast and have great moves and may be able to shake the press? Or do you do what they did against the Bucs, where they basically gave him a 10-yard cushion? And the one thing that Burrow would love to do, he'd love to just get back 1-2-3 throw and not have to deal with the rush at all. That's exactly what Baker did. So, I mean, you know, what? So you're the D coordinator. I want to hear how you would play it. It's not an easy answer. I'm not sure of the answer.
No, I mean, I would mix it up, but I mean, I think the press coverage might be a good play. Quinion Mitchell, he's pretty good, you know, and he's obviously going to go up against Ja'Marr Chase. But let's not forget, you got to go up against T. Higgins, too. And T. Higgins is picking, he's really starting to heat up over the last couple of weeks. But you can't let Burrow sit back and pick you apart. I think in any good quarterback, today's day and age, if you allow that to happen, they're just going to have a feast. They'll find other ways to get guys involved. Chase Brown,
Gesicki, and one thing the Eagles are susceptible for, or two, is big tight end down the middle. That's kind of a blind spot for their defense. And N'Kobe's really not good at covering big tight ends. And, of course, CJGJ is basically, he's really a hard-hitting tackle. So I see, if I'm the Bengals, Ikea Gesicki, just a really good, sure-handed guy. And he could, just like Tampa Bay, they killed the Eagles with that tight end down the middle. Charlie, you're the D coordinator for the Eagles. Do you play press on those two elite wide receivers? Do you play back? Do you just mix things up? What's your sense?
I do the best I can. Whether that, you know, moving a safety over, I'm not going to let them beat me. I'm going to say, look, if you want to run the ball and beat me, I'm not bringing any safeties up. I'm going to play. You know, I'm going to double Chase all the time. Chase never doesn't have a double. I'm going to put as many people as I can devote to watching out Higgins as well. I'm just going to say this. If you're going to beat me, you're going to beat me on the ground.
Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit because that's why we are called Rovers. There is a coach named Tony Bennett who's only 55 years old, and he looks like he's 40. He is a great coach, a national championship coach, and he, shockingly, in my view, is opting out before the season even starts. This is in your wheelhouse, Coach Daichi. You probably have known Bennett. You know people who know him. And I think he was pretty clear, pretty emphatic why he retired. What are your thoughts about that news? And will that herald other coaches of that ilk just getting out? They're just sick of what's going on in college sports.
I mean, Charlie, you're a big – I know you've always been a big proponent of paying athletes and amateurism, right? But, no, obviously –
we say that facetiously.
Yeah. Obviously, Charlie, this is the way it's been going. And there's no cap on it. There's kids that can transfer midseason. They'll literally leave. You can't discipline them. The old way is falling to the wayside, and there's – yeah, Tony Bennett, first of all, he's classic. A true gentleman of the game, and there's when he was the only coach
that's low tech.
He's the only coach that ever was a first round was a top overall seed, and they lost to UMBC, and then the following season won a national championship. It's the only first and only coach.
And that's resiliency, and we love to see that. He's a class act. I think everybody likes Tony. I don't think there's anybody in the coaching ranks. He's just one of the good guys out there.
Yeah, and his dad was a longtime coach at Wisconsin. And the funny story about his dad was the day that they were playing the national championship, he actually went to the game. And they kept saying, well, coach, you're going to go and support him. He goes, no, I'm going to go just to be there just in case they end up losing because I want to be there for my son. And that was his mindset where he's going to be there. Everyone's going to be there for the highs, but he'll be there for the lows. So it was just a great father-son relationship.
Well, you know what, Josh? Tony Bennett's 55, right?
Yep.
That's incredibly young. I think that Tony Bennett, there's a chance within 3 years, I think he'll do announcing, which I think he'll be great at. I think he'll be wonderful on TV. But if I'm Tony, I look at like a place like Northern Iowa, for example, or Southern Illinois, because when you play in the small mid-major markets, now your players get poached every couple of years in the mid-major markets, but the pressure will be less and the game will be pure. He'll be able to, like, if he coached St. Mary's, like, you know, Randy Bennett, isn't that like college at its purest, like the small mid-major types jobs?
Yeah, but here's the deal, Spencer. He's a legacy. He'll always be a legacy. The reason why he left Virginia was because he brought back his old assistant, Ron Sanchez, and he basically said, come back and be with me this year. And he brought him back 2 years ago from Charlotte. He was the head coach there.
So he kind of worked him in, and he kind of groomed him as an apprentice. And now he's going to let him go as a head coach. So this was planned. In his mind, this thing was planned. It's not a surprise in your view,
no.
Josh.
But, Bruce, after the break, I certainly have some theories about Bennett after the break that we could discuss.
Certainly, and I want to hear Charlie's input. We are Rover Sports. We're at the top of the hour. We have a brief station break. A ton more to go in the second part of the show.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
We are back. Sports Talk here. Spencer G. Josh Daichi. Charlie Bowles. our wonderful producer, Mr. Colin Newby, our videographer, Matthew Vito. We start off, and we're going to be doing a lot of quick hitters. Charlie, your thoughts on Tony Bennett?
Well, as far as the going to a smaller, more pure, in for the love of the game kind of school, ask the JMU football team where Indiana took 13 of their players and their coach and now are undefeated in the Big Ten. It's going to constantly be that way going forward, and I think Bennett saw that. I mean, he's in the same boat as Jay Wright, Nick yep. Saban, who were purists and basically saw the game being destroyed from the inside out. And he basically he's finished. I think that his love of the game is not more, he's not willing to go through this anymore just because he basketball is his life. It was a very, very, I'm sure, tough decision, but man, nothing but respect for that guy. You know how much money he left on the table? And again, he made a statement by doing it, just like Jay Wright. Look, it's going to take more names like that. You know, it was a big bomb when Saban left and then Jay Wright. You know, once you get three or four or five more names, and you got these, inexperienced coaches now coaching, and the game, just starts, killing itself from within, maybe there'll be some changes.
You know, Charlie, there's a reason why I've known Randy Bennett 20 years. And every time a big job opens up, Stanford, Cal, anywhere out on the West Coast, they always throw Randy's name at it. And Randy has said to me forever, I'm never leaving. I make a decent living at St. Mary's. I coach the way I want to coach. I coach hard. And I have good players. And he's been able to keep a lot of those guys for the most part. Obviously, the transfer portal lately has hurt him, but he's also benefited from some of the guys that they targeted but went higher. They went to a Power 4, a Power 5 school, and they built the relationships, and those guys aren't getting the playing time, and they're not getting the love, but they're also – the NIL, first of all, let me explain something about the NIL. The NIL is not guaranteed money. Everyone thinks that you have agents now, and agents try to broker these deals. So the NIL collective has to go up, and Penn State's a disaster – the best programs have it are Kentucky, Kansas, Alabama.
Probably A&M
Arkansas,
probably is pretty good with
yeah,
that.
Texas A&M.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
So when you say it's not guaranteed, explain that. I think the listeners are going to – you're really close to college athletics. I don't know what you're explain it to me.
So there's not a contract in place, which is what they need to get to. Because a lot of times what players will do is they'll say, well, a coach will say, hey, I can get you – prime time example, a guy from UNLV, a quarterback from UNLV.
That was a perfect example of a guy who just says, I'm leaving.
Yep.
They stiffed me. Even though I'm undefeated, I'm leaving. I'm proving a point, and I'm going into the portal, and I'm leaving.
Yeah, and
that's exactly what happened.
I believe they were 3-0 or 4-0, but the coaches promised them something. And then when they went to get paid on it, he said, hey, when am I getting my money? The NIL collective never agreed to it. So that's why the kid just left. There's a number of programs that do that in college basketball.
And you know what's funny about the UNLV situation, like a lot of other situations, is that sometimes the assistant coach or an assistant will negotiate the deal with the player, and the head coach will really be left in the dark and not knowing. It'll be the assistant, the NIL people, and the head coach will kind of have no idea. Isn't that true as well, Josh?
There's also a lot of there's so many shadows here. There's boosters, there's shadow boosters. So maybe those boosters are in the ear of the assistant coaches. Sometime, like the UNLV, they figure, this guy's stuck here. He's at UNLV. It's not a premier program. He's doing well. And they called his bluff. And then he called their bluff. So, Charlie, obviously, this is the big story, not only in basketball, but football, of course. Where do you – we talked about this before, about – you suggest that there may be regional, and again, that has to do with conference realignment, maybe regionally. Do you see this thing coming to a head at some point?
So, Charlie, I guess we lost Charlie.
You have temporary that's what's great about live radio.
But
sometimes you have technical glitches.
You know what?
Glitches.
The thing is about college sports, I think that there's going to be issues a lot of the time with sports. Tony Bennett is great, but like,
forget about Bennett.
Josh and I are here. We would still coach college basketball. If we were offered a head job, we would be on the flight the next day to do it. So I think it's a great living. I think the kids are still, I think the coaching kids is still a great, great living. I really do. And I think that eventually, though, you're going to see the conferences, you're going to see schools actually have contracts. Like, I believe, like what is that? Who does the Deion Sanders, the Aflac? I think you could see Aflac or an airline, like, sponsor, like, Texas or like Walmart.
Kind of like Nike's,
or, like, Walmart is going to pay.
Sponsors the Oregon Ducks.
Yes. Like, and I think that that's what's going to happen is Nike's just going to pay the players. I think they're going to make a set amount. But then if you're a star player, you're going to get that extra. So, again, and I think if you're a star player, you should make extra because you're worth more. So
Charlie, sir, it was a glitch at our end. We dropped you. Apologize. Obviously, this is right your wheelhouse. Where do you see this stuff going? Just focusing on the NIL component of it, do you have a sense for where this thing's moving?
I mean, what you're seeing now, look at football this year especially, there's more parity than ever. And again, I have people say that's good for the game. But look, at the end of the day, it's going to hit ahead at some point because what's going to happen is you're going to have these big boosters who are tired of losing. They're going to cut the money supply off. And then you're going to have these teams that are stuck paying these coaches these 15-year contracts at like $120 million. So, yeah, I think at some point, like anything else, if you don't have regulation, it's going to get out of control, and then you're going to have to either regulate it or blow the thing up. I think it's a matter of time. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow. It may take 5 years, but it's going to blow itself up eventually.
So we're going to do a few quick hitters. Heading into the week, one of the big games coming up will be your alma mater, Penn State, against the Wisconsin Badgers. And I've always thought of Wisconsin as kind of a team that underperformed. And this year they seem to be a bit better. I know. So, Josh, you're watching this game with keen interest. As always, it always seems like Penn State at this time of year is always on the threshold of greatness. And at some point or another, they let you down. And the only question is it this week? How do you assess this game moving forward, Penn State, Wisconsin? It's a primetime game. I think it's a premier game.
7:30 Saturday night at Wisconsin. So Penn State.
So that's a premier. I don't know if Wisconsin, they don't do a whiteout. Do they have any specific
I think
thing?
That's a Dr. Lewis and Alec Lewis.
That's a Dr. Lewis question,
yeah,
right?
Who is what?
Who is that? He's seeing Larry David, one of my favorite comedians. And so I'm kind of glad I didn't know Larry was performing or else I would have disappointed everybody by canceling the show. But instead, Dr. Lewis is watching one of the funny men, Mr. David. So go ahead. So Lewis would know that. Do you have a sense internally at Penn State? Are they really? Did they circle this game? Are they
Penn State? I think anytime late in when you're undefeated and you're heading in towards late October, we always circle the games because this is where Penn State and James Franklin have traditionally come up short. So Penn State, the next 3 weeks they play at Wisconsin, their home for a noon game against Ohio State, which everyone will be talking about next week. And then you'll have then they'll play their whiteout game versus Washington, who's been up and down all season. Doc, you know, Penn State's playing really well defensively. You know, Abdul Carter's a man. They're getting great line support. You know, Julian Fleming's starting to come into his own. Drew Aller had a couple great passes that he completed, and Tyler Warren had 17 receptions. So he's probably, in my opinion, should be a Heisman Trophy candidate the way he's playing. They're tied in. He's definitely a Mackey Award winner, in my opinion. But Penn State, yeah, are they going to be up for it? They're ranked third in the country. There's a huge bullseye. There's a reason why Wisconsin made this a Saturday night game, because they know how special it could be if they knock off number three.
There's another really interesting game. Spencer, we'll let you do a lead in that. I want to hear Charlie's input. LSU rated 8 in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kelly, very exciting team. It gets an A&M team that's kind of been a second-tier team, albeit with a good record, ranked 14 at home. A&M's got a huge stadium, a ton of NIL money, and if A&M ever is going to make a splash to get into the top 12, this would be it. What do you see in this game, Spence?
This is going to be a great game. I mean, you have A&M, their defense is just stacked. Like that defensive line, like they have soldered in on the defensive line. You have Mike Elko, who's a brilliant defensive coach, and they turned it up against Missouri. Then last week, you know, Mississippi State's getting a little bit pesky, so that was a little bit closer. The huge question mark is there's a stark difference in quarterback that I see in this game. You have a quarterback in A&M Connor Wiegman, that when he looks like he's throwing the ball, he looks like he's throwing a 15-pound medicine ball. He cannot throw the ball. It looks like his pectorals are fractured every time the guy throws the ball. Against Mississippi State, he should have thrown like three or four interceptions. Against Missouri, he did have a great game. But is Wiegman going to lose A&M the game? Because guess what? A&M's defense should get to Garrett Nussmeier. LSU's run game isn't even that good. They have Will Campbell, who's going to be a top 10 pick for Monroe, who's a really good tackle. They have tackles. They don't have the interior lineman now. Caden Durham's playing pretty good football. So can Nussmeier and LSU have enough offense? It's so exciting, Bruce. Blake Baker's been one of the best hires of the year, the defensive coordinator for LSU. So, man, I'm going to give the slight lean to LSU, because I think that they can pick off Wiegman. Their defense is going to have to get turnovers here.
So, Charlie, certainly A&M has revenge on its mind. Last year, Jaden Daniels, four touchdown passes. LSU, in a shootout of a game, beats A&M 42-30. Jaden Daniels is now on the Washington Redskins. And we have a game at A&M with a great defense. I know you're watching this game. It's almost a shame that both of these games, that the LSU and the Penn State games are exactly
neck and neck.
You know, neck and neck. And that's why we have a laptop computer, Spencer's laptop, and we have the ability. We're not in the houndstooth, which is the space age place where Charlie watches the game. You're gonna be watching this game with great interest. What do you see here, Charlie?
Number one, everyone's always welcome at the houndstooth. Look, a lot of parallels. Both teams started off with bad losses. LSU went down to USC. Notre Dame beat A&M. And now both teams have turned it around. And not only are they're winning impressively. But I think two different contrasts here. You have the arm of LSU versus Moss and Daniels, the backs of Texas A&M. A&M probably has the better defense. LSU just beyond impressive. Everyone was waiting for Arkansas to beat them and after them to let down week after they beat Ole Miss the week before. And they impressed. I give A&M the slight advantage because of their defense and their ability to run the ball. Quarterback, no comparison. LSU all day. But at the end of the day, I think if A&M plays defense, they got the home crowd and they got the running game. I think it's going to be an excellent game. Maybe one of the games of the year no one's talking about. I agree.
Well, we are at that time where we're going to be calling quick hitters. Quick hitters. We're going to be doing our fearless picks. And again, there's so much to talk about. People say we could do a 2 or 3 hour show with what's going on.
You're not even mentioning.
We didn't even touch the Sixers.
And you're
all
not even mentioning the most watched World Series probably in history of baseball.
Someday we're going to expand our horizons and we'll do more. But for now, it's time for the Fearless Picks. Go ahead, Josh. I'm going to go around the horn like we tend to do.
All right. So we have 5-1 Minnesota. They dropped their first game of the season against the great Detroit game. They're traveling to the LA Rams. The Rams are falling apart. There's talking about Stafford being traded, Cooper Kupp being traded. The Rams are getting 3 points.
And tell me, just the first team, I'm sorry.
Minnesota.
Wow. Okay, so I see this, for me, is an easy one. It almost looks too easy. I see Minnesota torching the Rams. They're in dysfunction. I don't care if they play in LA or Mars. Minnesota is just on a roll. They're a good team, and it took me a while to believe in them. You know how it took me a while? Losing all the picks I've done, and now I'm going to believe in them this time.
Yeah, the favorites this week, I believe the favorites, and Charlie will know, the favorites rolled last week. The Rams are not very good at all. 3 points, the line should be 7.5 or 6.5. Minnesota, I might be the quote-unquote, they might get me. But I'm going to take the Vikings as well.
Josh?
I'll take Minnesota. I think Sam Darnold's playing really well.
What do you see, Colin, in this game?
I'll still go Vikings.
He's going Vikings. Charlie Bowles, what do you see in this game?
Well, it's common sense versus fact. Every team that the week after they've played Detroit has lost, and the majority of them have gotten blown out. That's a fact this year. If something about playing Detroit wears you out, and now you're in a short week, I don't know. again, I common sense it with Baltimore last night. I just got tired of trying to read it, and I just common sense. Baltimore's a better team. I'm riding them. But there's something to be said about that after playing Detroit.
So that means you're taking the Rams?
With all that, I'm going to go Minnesota.
Yeah, oh, Minnesota. Okay, sorry. I should know. I should have the schedule better. You got me.
I couldn't do it.
No, I get it. I get it. Next game.
Comments.
All right, so then you got the Atlanta. Traveling to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was hot early. They're banged up. They've lost Mike Evans till week 11. Chris Godwin's out. So Atlanta at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is getting 2.5 points.
Every dog has its day. This is a divisional rivalry. I think that Baker Mayfield is going to be exposed, and I like him a lot. But without having two of his best receivers, he's going to be running for his life. I'm taking the Falcons in this game.
Revenge. Revenge is the key word. Baker Mayfield and the Bucs just about had the Falcons on that Thursday night game, and they let Atlanta get away. I think for 1 week, the Bucs can patch it together. I expect the Bucs to play well and win this game.
Josh?
I think Atlanta's got too much firepower, and when you have a decimated receiver room, I'm going to take Atlanta.
Colin?
I think Tampa can get it back together. I'm going to go Bucs out right here.
Charlie?
God, give me the under 46. But by the way, a line just ticked down in the Minnesota game to 2.5. Just something to keep an eye on. I like the under in this game. Kirk Cousins just scares me to death, but Baker doesn't have the weapons. I'll go Atlanta.
Okay,
next game.
The game three, Indianapolis. Boy, Anthony Richardson's falling apart quick, and the other guy who got drafted in the same round, C.J. Stroud's put up some pretty decent numbers. Indianapolis is 4-3, and they're traveling to Houston. Houston's given up 6, Doc.
Okay, I think that line tells you something. I think Houston is going to win by double digits. They're a better team. The other team is – the air is going out of the balloon. So I'll take the Texans in this game, and I feel like they've had a good – season. They've just had an off game, I think. So I feel pretty good about the Texans in this game.
You know what's interesting about this game? There's only a small degree of separation. Like, Bruce, if you were to guess the records, what would you guess?
No guessing. We got to keep things moving. Quick hitters. Go
Indianapolis
ahead.
Is 4-3 on the season.
I don't
one of the
be
weakest
terse,
four,
we
one
get
of the
game,
weakest 4-3s. I'm taking Houston as well. I think that their defense can turn up. They're very angry after losing to the Packers.
C.J. Stroud's the quarterback. He's going to be the general. I think he's that best group. I'm taking Houston.
Also think the line tells you something. I got Houston there.
Charlie.
Anthony Richardson stinks. Give me Houston.
Next game. This game is game
four.
Okay, we're really rolling. We're racing. Okay, got another 7 minutes. We got to roll. Here we go.
So we got Buffalo, 5-2. Traveling across the country to Seattle. Seattle's 4-3. Geno Smith has thrown for the most passing yards all season, averaging almost 290 yards a game. Seattle's getting 3 points.
Okay. Just every dog has his day theory. Buffalo's having a great season, but Seattle has got a great home field advantage, and I think Geno will be very comfortable, and I just think Buffalo's due for an off week. So using the oscillatory theory, I'm taking those Seahawks.
Great, great pick, Bruce. Got to tell you, great pick, because Seattle had a wonderful 20-point win against the Falcons. They have a first-year coach, and they're scaling up. They're getting better and better. They're finally understanding the scheme. This is a coming-out party moment, as Buffalo's offense has been shaky, so I love the Seattle pick as well.
Josh.
I agree with you, Spencer. DK Metcalf, Kenneth Walker, Geno Smith. I'm definitely going with Seattle.
Colin?
I'll go the Bills to cover that 3.
Charlie?
Metcalf sprained MCL, probably a game-time decision. Even if he plays, he'll be hobbled. I'll go Buffalo.
Game 5. Hold on, now we're rolling downhill.
Okay, Chicago, 4-2 off a bye. Defense is spectacular for them. They've been playing great. Caleb Williams starting to come into his own. They're traveling to Washington. Washington, the surprise, 5-2. Jaden Daniels was injured, but he's expected to play.
Wow, he's expected to play?
Expected to play.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, the Redskins are my surprise team of the year. I must say I usually hate the Redskins, and I love Daniels. It's really hard to pick the game not knowing if Daniels is going to be playing. But I just got a sense that the Bears are a tough team, and Washington has been playing over their head much of the season. It's time for them to come back down to earth. I'm taking the Bears.
I think it's a really good pick. I think that if the Bears' defense has actually been really good, and if they can get to Daniels, if Daniels is even playing, then I think that the Redskins are going to fall back a little bit. So I think the Bears have been a good team, and this is a Caleb Williams homecoming. Washington is his hometown, D.C., that is. So I do like the Bears. The Bears are getting points, Josh, 2.5?
Yes, Spencer.
Yes, I'll take the Bears outright.
Josh?
So I got to go with Washington. I believe in Jaden Daniels. He's an MVP candidate, and I like what I'm seeing down there, so take him.
We can certainly understand the Bear, you know, having trepidations about the Bears if you've watched them as long as we all have, and that may be a very good pick. Colin?
It's kind of an awkward game to me, a little bit of a weird line. I'll pick with my heart then and just go Bears to help out the Eagles.
That would be good. Charlie, what do you see in this weird game?
The Bears are actually favored by 2.5. That tells me Daniels will not be playing. And I think, look, I think Chicago's hitting it on cylinders right now. I'll take Chicago.
That's great. So it's good. We got 5 whole minutes left to talk about the Eagles going away to the Bengals. So I mentioned already that I think that the Bengals defense has something to prove. They need the game more than the Eagles do. The Eagles are still in a pretty bad division. The Bengals are going to be really sharpening their blades for this game. Burrow is a master at disarming quarterbacks and safeties when he has time to prepare, and he does. So I'm taking the Bengals. This is, as much as I'm an Eagles fan, this is my lock of the week. I'm taking the Bengals in this game.
All Cincinnati fans are just like, oh, why? but I really think that I think the Eagles have a chance in this game. I'll tell you why. I think the Eagles can win the game because the Eagles can rush the passer. Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts needs to play within himself. That's the formula. Okay, Jalen Hurts doesn't need to be Superman and put on the cape. You need a couple of big AJ Brown throws a game. Just play within yourself, play in the pocket. Don't really leave the pocket that often. And then you won't take those huge negative plays. So I'll go with the Eagles. I think the Eagles can surprise on the road.
Josh?
I mean, we'll be sipping the Kool-Aid if Philadelphia comes back. Saquon, Doc, I think there's a great analysis about them stacking the box. But I think A.J. Brown, he's probably the best receiver in football right now. So I'm going to take the Eagles.
Colin?
Starting to get a little bit more optimism about the Eagles. A lot of the guys on defense that I've crushed all season, like Hoff Smith and N'Kobe Dean, all did really well last week. So I'll be positive on them. I'll say they win it outright.
So I'm going to get Charlie's input, but I think it's an oscillatory league. Some of these guys just had a really good game against the Giants. They look better than they are. And going away, going to the jungle, and it is the jungle, and Cincinnati has a great home field base. I lived right outside of Cincinnati in 1989. I spent a lot of time there. I really like it. I like the town. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people are actually traveling to that game. I'm not one of them. Charlie, what do you see?
I go back to that Cincinnati game against Baltimore, and I think of the potential that offense of Cincinnati has. I think they pull it together against the secondary. I think Cincinnati wins outright.
So I just want to thank everybody for logging on to Rover Sports again. For some of you who are used to seeing Bruce Grossinger Facebook, we will rise again like a phoenix from the ashes. But guess what? We're not there yet. So go to phillysportsdoc.com, obviously to look at regenerative medicine. Go to Phila, Phila, Sports Doc on YouTube. Go to Bruce Grossinger, Dr. Bruce Grossinger on LinkedIn. And for everybody, our two producers, and, of course, our staff, in absentia, Dr. Lewis, we look forward to getting his input during the week. Enjoy Larry David, one of the funniest people on earth. But as always, for Tuesday night here at the Perch at Bell and Kenwood, good night and good sports.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
What's up, Philadelphia? Welcome back to First Time, Long Time. I'm Colin Newby of 97.5 The Fanatic and 93.3 WMMR, coming to you weekly with Philly Sports Talk. And there's a lot going on in the sports world. There's a lot going on in Philadelphia. The Eagles are back on track after winning two in a row. You got Sixers season starting up. You got a dream World Series matchup with the Dodgers and the Yankees. And I want to tell you a story toward the end of the show because it's the World Series. I'm going to play some sound of a pretty ridiculous story I got about Cliff Lee in the 2009 World Series at Yankee Stadium. But really, it's going to be a Flyers episode, and more specifically, a John Tortorella episode.
So the chain of events, if it was done right, we don't lose our goalie, we win the hockey game. So all this technology, right? The technology and getting things right, the stubbornness tonight by the officials and by the league and Toronto, however it's supposed to work, screws us.
John, do you think this has to be a physical series for your team to win or a fast series?
I think it's going to be a little of both. Right now, I don't know what the hell it is.
Don't put words in my mouth. Kiss my
It's one of the most arrogant organizations in the league. They whine about this stuff all the time, and look what happened. But they'll whine about something else over there, won't they?
We're probably beat up in the bus stop most of the time.
I think so, huh?
That sound courtesy of Sportsnet Canada, and that's what I knew about John Tortorella when the Flyers hired him a little over 3 years ago. I've also experienced some of this stuff on my own, too.
There are certain people that they don't have a clue how to play or just don't have it in them to play in these type of situations. Rest, this, that, the other thing. If you don't have enough balls to play in these type of games, rest doesn't do us any good.
I even got this treatment myself one time. When John Tortorella benched Tony DeAngelo 2 seasons ago, I asked him a question about it post-game. He looked at me as if I had just spit on his ancestor's grave. I had a teacher in high school use that analogy phrasing to me once. I've also seen the Kevin Hayes debacle, whatever that was in terms of misreporting after the Cutter Gauthier trade or confusion with what was actually said by the reporter. But I also knew before John Tortorella came to the Flyers that he was a good coach in Columbus. I also knew he won the Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2004. I remember the Flyers facing the Lightning in the Eastern Conference Final that year. That series went 7 games, and it was just so tight. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago in some of the greatest moments in Flyers captain history. Keith Primeau was the captain of that team. He had an excellent series. That Game 6 comeback that the Flyers had, one of the most electrifying hockey games I've ever seen. But John Tortorella is the one who won the Cup that year. He was a young coach just coming into his own. So he made his bones with the Lightning. He also kind of resurrected the Rangers a few years later. That stint wasn't as successful, but I still think he had a decent tenure in New York. So I was anxious to get down to the arena and see some excitement, if nothing else. It was a big-name coach. He's one of only a few coaches in NHL history ever to win the Jack Adams as the Coach of the Year multiple times. And since he's been here, Tortorella's kind of lived up to the reputation. He's rough around the edges. He's difficult to deal with. He's tough as nails. He can jump on you at any point and be really aggressive. And yeah, he can go over the top. All in all, as a hockey coach, I think he's done a great job with the Flyers, and I'll tell you why after the break.
If it's happening in Philly sports, Colin Newby's talking about it. Go with him behind the scenes of legendary sports venues with the best athletes and the most iconic media personalities of the greatest sports city in the world.
What's up, Philadelphia? Welcome back to First Time, Long Time. I want to jump into certain misperceptions that I think some people had about John Tortorella. They've mostly been weeded out at this point. It's his third season in Philadelphia. At least from what I hear most people talk about, I think they've been weeded out. But some things were oversimplified about his coaching style a couple years ago when the Flyers hired him. I think too many NHL coaches depend on veteran players. They're more comfortable falling back on veteran players than they are with taking a little bit of a risk, putting younger players on the ice who maybe are more skilled, but they don't have that grizzled hockey veteran type of game. I think people thought that about Tortorella, kind of assumed that he would be that type of coach. And I also think certain fans, with the personality style John Tortorella has, he'd be into the physical game, over-reliant on a checking style, the whole Broad Street Bullies bit since it was the Flyers that hired him, maybe stuck in the past in terms of fighting. Not really. That hasn't come to fruition at all, actually. And this is not the indicators that people would have suspected. For the home opener of the 2024-25 season, Jamie Drysdale spoke about John Tortorella and the messaging he had gotten from him. And what Jamie Drysdale said, I think it's just such a microcosm of John Tortorella's time in Philadelphia.